Welcome to In the Hive. Utah's plans for medical marijuana have hit some snags. In July, the state unveiled the list of business entities that had been awarded licenses to grow cannabis to supply the program in the state, and was met with immediate challenges by some of the applicants who didn't make the cut. In addition, some medical cannabis advocates questioned the state's decision to award only 8 growing licenses instead of the 10 envisioned under Utah law. And in a challenge to the very structure of the state's plans, last week, 2 Utah county attorneys announced that they would be advising their county's health departments not to participate in distributing medical cannabis, because if they did, they'd be breaking federal law, and the respective counties could lose grant funding as a result. And so, in more ways than one, the brakes are being pumped on a program that had already faced a fair amount of criticism. I'm Roger McDonough, and today on the show we are looking at how things stand, for now anyway, for medical marijuana in Utah. First, a quick reminder of how we got to where we are now. Utah voters passed a citizen ballot initiative to legalize medical marijuana, called Proposition 2, in November of last year. Lawmakers, though, concerned with some of the provisions of that proposition, took matters into their own hands and crafted their own plan for medical marijuana. Some of the main differences between the ballot initiative voters passed and what lawmakers decided to do were that instead of 40 marijuana dispensaries, there would be 7 cannabis pharmacies. Instead of a private distribution network, there would be a state-controlled process for that distribution. And for rural areas, county health departments would be empowered to fill prescriptions. More on that in just a bit. Despite the criticism that lawmakers had overridden the will of the people, it has to be said that public pressure did bring about a scheme for legal medical cannabis in the state in the end. Andrew Rigby is the director of the Medical Cannabis and Industrial Hemp Program for the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. Earlier this week, he described for me, in a nutshell, the planned supply chain for this scheme, from growing marijuana to packaging medicine to consumption by patients.
So basically, if you think about it as a supply chain itself, right, a linear supply chain, we basically have cultivators and processors at the beginning, along with laboratory testing of product, right? I would say that that's the heart of the supply chain that the Department of Agriculture and Food oversees. And then as well, we have the Department of Health, who really oversees the pharmacies and then the doctor-patient relationship. And so the Utah Medical Cannabis Act delegates authority to both departments to oversee the program as one.
So how is medical cannabis supposed to be consumed in Utah?
Great question. We'll see a variety of different products that patients can use. In the Utah Medical Cannabis Act, there's what we call an approved medicinal dosage form list. Those are things like concentrated oils, sublinguals, transdermals, tinctures, pills, capsules, flower, and a secondary option. If none of those methods of consumption that I just mentioned are efficient, you would then qualify for the use of resins and waxes.
And this is meaning that your doctor says, this isn't working for you, I'm going to bump you up to the next thing.
Or by weight, not necessarily the THC isn't working, but maybe the mode of application of usage is not an efficient delivery.
Got it. Yeah, I don't want to confuse things, which I probably already have. But
no, you're fine.
So that is just mode of delivery. And yeah, go ahead.
So yeah, so those are the approved medicinal dosage forms. And so in the pharmacy, you'll see an array of products from oil concentrates, vape cartridges. There's so many different derivatives of oil concentrates that can be found in the market. You'll see flower, you'll see tinctures, capsules. You'll see basically anything that might fit within that list. And we will have processors, right? So I kind of got lost off on a tangent with the cultivators, but to finish that supply chain cycle, we've got the processors who are a component of that supply chain. And between the processors and the cultivators, we have kind of at a higher level, we have these laboratories, if you will, where product will be tested interchangeably and back and forth and readied for pharmacy delivery. And then patients would then come in after having received a recommendation from their doctor. They would come into a pharmacy, purchase product, and go on their way, so to speak. So.
And the doctors, for what they're prescribing, are going to have to go on literature, I guess, from other states or recommendations from other medical providers out there.
Yeah, and this is another place where Utah is a little unique. The Utah Medical Cannabis Act does not require that the doctor, him or herself, prescribe the parameters of dosing and or product or medicine. That can be deferred to the pharmacist. Mm-hmm. And so the pharmacist can make those calls if the doctor has not made those calls when the patient is in the pharmacy or...
That's interesting. So a doctor could say, I think that you could benefit from medical cannabis, go to the pharmacist.
And leave it at that, and yeah, then let the pharmacist decide.
Okay. So, are there limits on the quantities of medical cannabis you're consuming, and what are those?
Yeah. So basically the way the law is written right now is a patient can possess up to, I want to say, 126 grams per month. They can purchase up to 126 grams of THC mm-hmm. per month, which is basically a quarter pound of pure THC. So we also, Utah has some of the highest possession limits in the nation as well, which probably would surprise some people. So if currently, as the bill is written, it's 126 grams, I believe, if you live within a 100-mile radius of a dispensary, or excuse me, of a pharmacy. If you live outside of that 100-mile radius, you can double your possession, your purchasing capability. And that's really for patients who live in rural areas, so they don't have to drive in all the time. But the 100-pound elephant in the room, so to speak, that you've already mentioned is possible changes that are coming down the pipeline.
We'll get to the need for changes coming down the pipeline in just a minute. Before we do, I'll mention that Rigby told me he wasn't sure about that 126 grams number. I checked the text of the law, and the baseline number is actually 113 grams of THC, about 4 ounces. Rigby, by the way, also pushed back on that criticism that 8 growing licenses wasn't enough to supply the state's medical marijuana needs.
Utah is abnormal in the sense that, relative to other states in the nation, our cultivation licenses have a very high capacity, if you will, by way of product that can be produced. So an outdoor license is able to grow up to 4 acres of product. Indoor, they're able to grow up to 100,000 square feet. So for those maybe who are familiar with the cannabis industry, those are on the higher end, very much in the 90th plus percentile of size of licenses that exist in the nation. So we, rather than having, you know, maybe 100 small little licenses that grow a couple thousand square feet each, the lawmakers decided to keep those numbers relatively small, so it was easier to track and do compliance on. So we'll have some larger grows. So I know there's a narrative out there that Utah will be undersupplied. From my opinion, from my perspective, that couldn't be further from the truth.
One of the organizations that helped get the now-defunct voter-approved medical marijuana initiative passed is TRUCE, or Together for Responsible Use and Cannabis Education. Doug Rice is TRUCE's community liaison, and he has a very personal reason for wanting access to medical cannabis.
I've been a paramedic, still licensed as a paramedic even though I'm retired, still licensed and have been for 30 years. I've seen what medical cannabis could do. And when my daughter developed epilepsy as part of her underlying disability, we found that she could get some relief from seizures with the use of CBD oil. So that's where we started, was clear back in 2014. That's how I got involved with Epilepsy Association of Utah. There were a bunch of moms that were pushing really hard in the legislature for CBD use, which had been coming out of Colorado. A little girl by the name of Paige Figge's mom, Charlotte Figge, was the first child in the state of Colorado, first minor, to receive a medicinal card. And took her from down to zero, in fact.
For seizures.
Yes, 0 to 1 seizure a day. Now, what a lot of people may not realize is that seizures actually kill more people every year than breast cancer. 46,000 people a year die from seizures. It's called SUDEP, sudden unexpected death from epilepsy. Every one of these seizures that my daughter has could kill her. So on pharmaceuticals, we were anywhere between about 8 and 2 dozen seizures a day. Good day, 8. Bad day, 25. When we started using CBD, we were able to drop her down to the 3 to 5 range. On a bad day, maybe 8 to 10. But 3 seems to be fairly typical for her. Now, once we realized that THC was also an active part of seizure control, we tried an oil that was full plant-based. So full spectrum oil. She had her first 0 seizure day in over a year. So you can imagine how elated I was to know that this possibility of SUDEP was disappearing with the use of THC. But THC has a pretty bad reputation in Utah, much of it not really earned. You know, THC is not the bad guy.
That bad rap Rice is talking about is one of the reasons that it's taken as long as it has for the state of Utah to make medical cannabis legal. It's also, of course, one of the reasons marijuana is still classified as a Schedule I drug by the federal government. And that brings us to the snags in Utah's plans that I described at the very top of the show. Salt Lake County District Attorney Sim Gill says that once lawmakers had unveiled their plans to overhaul Proposition 2, again, that was the voter-passed bill legalizing medical marijuana, once the dust had settled and the details of the new law were known, he saw that there was a problem.
It became pretty obvious to us at that time that the scheme that the state of Utah had come up with actually put Salt Lake County Health Department as articulated in that distribution chain. And we knew that it raised some potential for concern. So one of my roles is as the legal counsel to the health department and to Salt Lake County. And my responsibility is to articulate the liabilities and the exposure to risk and to help evaluate and navigate through that risk to my client, in this case, Salt Lake County, and the health department.
And so Gill and Davis County District Attorney Troy Rawlings offered advice to those health departments.
As we looked at it from its inception, we realized that, first of all, as cannabis continues to be a Schedule I drug on the federal level, and by creating a state actor relationship in the distribution chain, you still had state action. And therefore, the federal law would be applicable to us. And as a result, as state agents, we would be actually violating federal law. And that's fine, you know, as an articulation. But when we also became concerned about not only a violation, but more importantly, the collateral consequences of potential risk that would pertain to not only the grants that the health department got, but potentially grants that the county was getting, because one of the things that we have to do is to certify in those federal grants that we are following the law, that we're not going to be violating the law. And then as legal counsel, it was putting us in a position to knowingly and intentionally to ask our client to violate federal law. That was run contrary to our ethical issues. And if there is a potential risk of loss of those other federal dollars, which is millions and millions of dollars for other viable programs, if that should come to pass, then there's a cascading effect of passing that liability on to the Salt Lake County taxpayers.
However, the state of Utah says it has assurances from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, in the form of a letter, that no grant money will be lost if those county health departments are engaged in the distribution of medical marijuana under state law. But the Salt Lake County DA, Sim Gill, isn't swayed by that letter. Why?
Well, two reasons. First of all, that letter is not binding. Second of all, that letter is only good until it is not good as a result. And then we have to look at it as a risk that is created. With all due respect to my state leadership there, we have been down this path of waivers before. Not to put too fine of a point, look at Medicaid expansion. And so we can't count on the federal government to follow through on letters that are written where the collateral impact is a disproportionate liability that is risk. And here's my other point. If there is such a level of assurance and such a level of confidence that the state has, then the state can itself directly participate in that distribution chain without making the counties a part of it. Why not assume that risk themselves? Because that's a very easy way to solve that problem.
One issue that the state's plan, where county health departments serve as de facto pharmacy locations, sought to avoid was a problem of distribution. Part of the fear is that the private market wouldn't treat rural and urban areas the same, because as a business selling your medicine, the incentive would be to be located where most of the people are, making it harder for patients in sparsely populated areas to access the drug their doctors think they need. So what's the solution to the hiccups the Utah Medical Cannabis Act is running into? Doug Rice from the pro-cannabis group Truce says that the state should scrap the program altogether and start over, or revert to what voters passed, which envisioned a lot more dispensaries for the drug, dispensaries that weren't part of state government.
I would advocate for the state to just fold up the tent and take it home. The whole central fill and health department dispensing model, it's never worked anyplace else. There's not another state in the nation that is using state services to dispense cannabis in the fashion that Utah has been. We've always prided ourselves on smaller government, and I would suggest that Utah keep their eye on the ball and allow the private sector to handle this. Let business do what business is best at.
And the state is reticent to do that, I guess, out of a fear of this being a gateway to recreational use of marijuana.
Most probably. My response to that would be that the people that are using recreationally are already using recreationally. In fact, that's how the state wants users such as my daughter. As a caregiver, I have to pick up product for my daughter, and I go out of state because I've got some very reliable sources out of state. But there are people that depend on locals. They're dependent upon the black market, and it's already here. It's already functioning, and it's flourishing.
Salt Lake County District Attorney Sim Gill, meanwhile, says that the public-private aspect of the law passed at the state level is important because it acts as a check on prices for patients, and he has his own idea for what should be done.
I think the state component, I think, is an important component to keep prices down. I think that we forget that. Look, my focus has always been to support patients, and the private market may price them out. So I worry about the private market pricing out that access. So I'm generally concerned about that. I am certainly sensitive to geographic equity in terms of making the product available to as wide range geographically as we can. So let's take the counties out of the equation. If the state is absolutely comfortable with the assumption of risk, assume that risk. And one of this very simple, elegant solution is to create the opt-in, opt-out kind of a possibility. Counties can opt in, they can opt out. And if they opt out, then the state steps in. The state has many buildings and holdings in every county, and nothing would preclude them from serving as a distribution site from that. And I think that the state can do that.
For his part, Andrew Rigby, director of the state's medical cannabis program, was unable to comment on the advice District Attorneys Gill and Rawlings had given to their respective health departments. However, he says that various stakeholders are right now working on a new design for the program that will change things, maybe pretty drastically. Stay tuned to KCPW for details when they are released. Details that are expected to come out of a special legislative session that will likely come together in September.
There's changes coming where we basically have increased the efficiency of every single cost along the supply chain everywhere we can, as high as we can. So with what we're looking to do, it should all work out. Unfortunately, we got to be patient and can't talk about any of this stuff, but at some point when it's disclosed by the people who have the authority to disclose that information, I think it's going to be a completely different conversation. And I think people will be quite surprised about how people have actually literally come together. And yeah.
Okay, so with that vague teaser of changes coming for the program out of the way, in the interim, can patients legally buy and consume medical cannabis in Utah? Doug Rice, who uses the drug to treat his daughter's seizures, has this to say.
I have a letter that was issued by our doctor so that I could pick up product for her. Now, I made it easy on myself. I also am a patient, and I have not used, but I figured that the easiest way for me to do it was to get a letter for myself as well. So it doesn't really matter whether it's for my daughter or for myself. If I'm the one who's in possession of it, to give it to my daughter, then I'm legal.
Can other caregivers and or potential patients get the same sort of letter from their doctor and go and legally do this elsewhere?
Sure. Yeah, if you feel that you have a need, you go to talk to your doctor. Your doctor looks at you, has a conversation with you, and decides, yes, you are or are not a candidate. If you are a candidate, they issue you a letter. And the letter is actually not even required. You just need to have the conversation with your doctor. The letter provides you with a piece of physical evidence in the event that you get arrested for possession that hopefully will prevent prosecution of you for possession because you are a medical patient.
And so I asked the prosecutor for his perspective on the question of, well, prosecution. As we wait to see what the state is going to do, given the advice that you have given to county health departments, you know, if a doctor recommends someone medical cannabis right now in the interim and they go elsewhere to get it, say Colorado, and it otherwise fits the letter of the Utah law, are they going to be prosecuted if they are pursuing that route to get this medication if their doctor advises it for them?
You know, that's a great question, and I can only answer it in my capacity as the Salt Lake County District Attorney and in my capacity as the Chief Salt Lake City Prosecutor through the interlocal agreement. And what I have advised as a matter of policy in terms of proportionality and fairness is that we can still enforce the law without the collateral impact and damage of the criminalization that occurs under the current existing reality. So what I mean by that is that I would advise certainly my prosecutors to say that if there is a medical note, there is less than 4 ounces of cannabis, that we do not need a conviction. Because as I've publicly come out well before Proposition 2, one of my core concerns was the criminalization of patients who are in medical need. And so we will do plea and advances, we will do diversions, we will do things which allows me to do my role as a public prosecutor without the collateral criminalization of that as a interim sort of solution. So I think we can find fairness and proportionality, and that's a policy decision in terms of enforcement, which is within my discretion. And that's the way we're approaching it. So if right now you happen to be in Salt Lake City in front of the Salt Lake County DA's office prosecution, I would ask to look for your medical note, and we would work on a case-by-case basis to make sure that we do not criminalize your medical needs.
While we wait to see where the cards fall when it comes to whatever is on the horizon for medical cannabis, in Salt Lake County, at least, patients have the district attorney's assurance that they won't go to jail for seeking relief from an otherwise legal, but not yet available in Utah, drug. In the Hive comes to you from 88.3 FM KCPW. We are the Greater Salt Lake Valley's listener-supported independent public radio resource. The show's theme music is by Andrew Shaw. Find podcasts of this and all of our local programs at kcpw.org or through your favorite podcast app. Both Sides of the Aisle is coming up next. I'm Roger McDonough. Hope you'll tune in again next week.